Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
So here is how we can get Robert De Niro an Oscar for his performance in the 2008 motion picture Stardust as Captain William Shakespeare. I'm making it my life mission now.
This was...
Is it his best performance?
I would say yes. I would.
Wow.
This was truly transcendent.
Would you say it's a star?
A star is born.
Late career.
Yes. Yes.
I was going to say, because I feel like his late period career is so fascinating because he makes, I wouldn't say, a lot of good choices.
Well,
And he maybe phones some performances in.
We'll talk about it. Yeah.
I go back and see all the good De Niro, the weirder bad De Niro becomes.
Yeah.
It's so wild,
it's
right?
Like, how did this... I watched Stardust after watching Godfather Part 2, which was also like a harrowing experience.
Oh my God. I feel like there's the years in between. There's so much changes in between then.
You really see the time etched on his face. That's, I mean, you know, his best and second best performance. And
we'll exactly.
Conservatively put Raging Bull at number three or whatever.
Wow. Heat found dead in a ditch.
Yeah. Heat's in the, I mean, come on. Listen, if we're going to dive into Robert De Niro, we can.
Well, we have covered him multiple times now.
I know. But it's like you have to cover him like six different times to really get a sense of the scope and all that.
He is, yeah.
Well, this is a perfect movie to do so.
Absolutely, yeah.
Hi, I'm Hello. Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson.
Today we are talking 2007's Stardust.
I feel like you should have started the episode with Once Upon a Time. You know what I mean?
Like
Once Upon a Time.
I'll let you
know. And then you come into the intro.
Yes.
You want to redo it? Should we just start over?
No. I get worried when you suggest things like that because I know you're not really joking.
I'm joking.
Are you okay. But we're joined today, past and current and hopefully future guest of the pod from Gawker, editor-in-chief of Fran Magazine. It's Fran Hoffner. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me back. I was so excited to see this movie on the list.
Oh, I have had this movie in my Netflix queue for, no joke, probably 5 years.
Oh my God.
Have meant to watch this movie like the entirety of college, since college. Like
graduated, a whole life has gone by.
I kept being like, oh yeah, let me put that in. Like, I'll get to it. It looks so good. And then I never got to it. And this episode finally gave me an excuse. So I would just like to thank you from the bottom of my heart because this movie was so good. I loved it.
You're doing the Lord's work, really.
This was like the first movie that, because this came out when I was 16. And so as my friends were all getting their licenses, I remember this is the first movie where someone who had gotten their license before me, like, drove us all to go see the movie.
Ooh.
And it felt like this real first taste of, like, no parents.
Yeah.
Even though, like, we'd been dropped off at the movies before, but that was different. This was, like,
different.
No,
we took ourselves to see it.
Yeah. And
wow,
you can,
that's an experience,
the
too.
The feeling of freedom. You can do anything. You can stop at the 7-Eleven and sneak some candy in. Like, you're completely... Mm-hmm. Devoid of parental supervision. I also love that this was like, oh yeah, we're big kids now. We're gonna go see Stardust.
It felt really adult at the time, and even now it feels like sort of more adult than most PG-13 movies.
Yeah.
When you saw it then, did you like it, or how was your relationship changed? Okay. Yeah.
I loved it. I was sort of a burgeoning Neil Gaiman fan.
I was just going to say, are you a Gaiman head?
I was at the time. I'm not currently. and I had not read this, but I did read the book after. And they're actually quite
okay, you
different.
Have read the book. Okay. Well, I feel like that's important. Because it doesn't the book, there's, have not read the book, don't know anything basically about it. Isn't there like fucking and stuff like that? Like, is
that's
it sexy?
The only thing Jordan knows.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little more sexual and it's not really that fun.
Oh.
And it's quite sort of political and direct. Like, I remember not being crazy about the book. I think the movie fixed some stuff that is not that good about the book.
I feel like that's good. I mean, like, this movie, I feel like, is so charming and like very Princess Bride-y, and that's like what makes it so delightful. And I feel like if it's so bogged down in seriousness, that's not fun.
I think what it hits a very nice tone though, because it's not like self serious, but it's also not like poking fun at itself. Like, I like that it is just kind of like a traditional costume drama in a lot of ways that like happens to include fantasy elements. Like, it's not too much leaning on the, okay, we have a fantastical world and that means we need like this, that, and the other thing. Yeah. It's so nice. I feel like we were trying to think of things to like compare to it when we were lamenting the fact that these movies don't get made very often because they always bomb like 99% of the time. But it's so good. Big Treasure Planet energy, in my opinion.
I've still never seen that for whatever reason.
It's good, excellent.
But weird. Yeah.
Like, is it so different than a lot of the other late aughts, like, fantasy movies? Because those are all, like, chosen girl movies. Like, Mortal Instruments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is it sort of like Golden Compass, but Golden Compass not good? You know, because I feel like the Golden Compass kind of was, like,
I was thinking very Chronicles of Narnia, because even though those books, there's, like, a little younger, it is the same, like, kids from real world.
It's like Narnia sequels.
Yeah.
Prince Caspian's coming in.
Yeah. It's got the Ben Barnes of it all. It was all happening for Ben Barnes in like 2007.
It really was.
I have such a crush on him. I have such a soft spot for him. Love him.
Question for the team. Do we have a crush on Charlie Cox in this or not?
He's a little too like doe-eyed for
me. I did at the time.
Interesting. Yeah.
At the time of viewing, this was like quite a thing. Rewatching, I was like, ugh. But I watched one season of Daredevil, and I've always liked him. I think he's interesting.
It's such a bizarre career.
I like him in Daredevil because he's a man haunted by his Catholic guilt. So obviously,
your type.
I'm like,
yes. I love this.
But yeah, he's very pretty. He's very like sort of.
I feel like the hair choice is what throws me off in this. Like,
I liked him when his hair got longer.
In this?
Yes.
I don't know if I liked the hair at all.
He's a cutie. It was a thing. I remember I was reading in the trivia, the all-important IMDb trivia, that
always factual,
Matthew
always true.
Vaughn like really fought to cast him, and like everyone wanted like Orlando Bloom, which makes sense because
Pirates of the Caribbean.
And also Charlie Cox is a little bit like poor
discount
man's Orlando Bloom, especially at this point in time.
By that point, I just don't think like Orlando Bloom could have played underdog.
No.
He
was Legolas already. He was Pirates of the Caribbean
already.
It's
sort of hard to even buy him as an underdog in like early, the first hour of Pirates.
Really is. It's like, oh, this guy, he works as a blacksmith. And
he
like,
just can't catch
a
break.
This really hot woman. Oh my God, are they going to end up together? You're like, he's like the chosen man. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Right. And I think whenever Orlando Bloom has been good in like the last 10 years, it's because he's been cast as like a villain. Or like a... I don't know, like a pompous asshole. Because you don't want to root for him.
What's like, what's his best post-Pirates choice? I'm trying, like, I really feel like I don't see him
much. We liked him in Troy, even though that movie is a crime against humanity.
That's like,
I love Troy, but I've not seen as an adult.
It has not aged well.
I love Orlando Bloom in the Paul W.S. Anderson Three Musketeers. This movie is actually quite similar to that.
Yes.
That feels like a good call. Yes.
That is also a very good cast. That's the one, that's the Logan Lerman, Matthew McFadden. Yes. Ooh.
I feel like that's also a movie that didn't do well and doesn't really exist.
No, totally. But it like, it's fun.
Swashbuckling stuff, I feel like, is always hard. Even though this is more of like a traditional fantasy, like, I feel like they were like pirates. They're here.
Is Guy Ritchie's King Arthur sort of in?
No,
it's a little too brawlery. Adult. Yeah.
This is like, it's whimsical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guy Ritchie's stuff is all too like guitar core.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Shirtless men boxing. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Guitar core. I think that this reminded me a little bit of Ella Enchanted again.
Mm. Oh, sure.
Not like, it's more broad. That movie
Claire
is more
Danes
jokey.
Definitely has like her energy, I feel like, in this. Like Anne Hathaway.
They wanted Anne Hathaway originally.
Look at that.
Probably would have been better.
I mean, Claire Danes, It's, she is such, like, I feel like she is one of those fat, like, all of these people in this, it's, like, truly one of the best casts, like, ever assembled. I love it so much. But, like, going through all their careers is so fascinating. Like, Claire Danes has, like, racked up so many Emmy noms and, like, W's from Homeland, which, like, you don't really think about. But then also her whole career started, what was that show? My So-Called Life?
My So-Called Life, yeah.
Right, which she also was, like, critically acclaimed. And you, like, forget about that and you forget about Romeo and Juliet. She's, like, always been here and, like, kind of thriving, but, like, also, I don't know if she's, like, a star or, like, people necessarily, like, think of her that way.
She has some prestige to her, right?
Yeah, but, like, yeah. Would you say, like, if people are, like, thinking about, like, leading women, I feel like she's, like, never on, like,
well,
lists.
Who's
or
excited for the Apple TV original The Essex Serpent?
Oh, I thought you were gonna say Fleischman
just
is in
me?
Trouble.
Just me? Okay.
Oh, is she in Fleischman?
She's the lead, yes.
Oh.
I know.
I mean, I definitely watched, like, 1.2 seasons of Homeland and always kind of liked her on that. I don't really know. I've never seen any of My So-Called Life.
I haven't either.
I struggle to watch her play, like, loose, which she's kind of supposed to do with this. She's so, like, mannered and uptight, which is, like, what's so great about her in Homeland.
Right. Like, that's yeah, it's her whole thing in Homeland.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's just that she and Charlie Cox don't really have chemistry. I think individually they're both kind of good in this, but, like, together I'm just like, all right.
I would say the banter portion of this story where it's like, well, we have to, like, make them hate each other before they can fall in love is a little weird to me.
Well, it's like classic Princess Bride, like Robin Wright, Cary Elwes,
right?
You know?
But they don't have the sizzling on
the
screen
sexy
chemistry that could never be replicated by two actors desperately wanting to
fuck. Yes.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, the banter is a little, like, too mean-spirited, and they don't talk much about, like, what they actually like what is actually interesting, which is a classic fantasy problem.
Yeah. That Charlie Cox Tristan character is just kind of so nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, you can kind of remove him from everything and it doesn't really matter. Obviously, he's the driving force, but everyone else around him is, like, making a meal out of what they're given. Mm-hmm. So it's like when he's just kind of, like, doing the beats, it's kind of just fine, you know?
Yeah.
Is that kind of just the Matthew Vaughn thing, though? Like,
I was about to say, this might be the Matthew Vaughn problem outside of, like, Layer Cake. I've seen all of his except Kick-Ass. The Kick-Ass is, weirdly.
Okay, how is Layer Cake? Because that's the only one I haven't seen of his.
I'm in the minority in that I don't really like that movie, but it's everything I generally do like. Daniel Craig is great in it. That movie just kind of does nothing for me.
I feel like that poster, like, rings in my fucking head. It's like one of those ones that, like, it's same with, like, Domino, like, Tony Scott's Domino. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, those, like, posters, like, very from the
good
early 2000s, like, yellows.
Deep fried,
you know?
Posters. Yeah. Yeah.
But, okay, so he's good in that. But, like, the Kick-Asses are fine. But, again, it's that same thing where, like, Aaron Taylor Johnson is just, like, fine. But, like, you're there for, like, Nick Cage or, like, Evan
Chloe.
Peters. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or, like, dare I say Matthew Vaughn movies are always kind of betraying their leads in favor of Mark Strong.
Yeah.
Honestly, true.
The fact that I didn't know that Mark Strong was essentially, like, a Matthew Vaughn power player, I was just happy to see him, and then I put the pieces together and I was like, wait, okay,
we love it.
I'm a huge Mark Strong fan. We just talked about him a little while ago in
Sherlock Holmes. A good movie. So good. So good. I feel like, delightful in this. It's always bizarre seeing him with hair. But, like, it works because I feel like that's the bit in this movie, is, like, all the brothers are just insane ghost people, which I love. The runner of all of them always being there is a plus. It's like the Haunted Mansion in Disney. I'm obsessed with it. No notes on the brother side of things.
It's great. But wait, I have to ask, when did you first watch this movie?
Really? No.
This was also a first?
However many days ago. Yes, it was. It's been similar. It's been on my list.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Someone on Letterboxd had rewatched it, and, like, I went through, like, people who loved it, and I was like, wow, like, this actually, like, people seem to stand this movie. I haven't even heard of this film in so long. Like, I remember the poster, but in my brain, I, like, lumped it together with The Golden Compass, which was a movie I didn't love, and, like, that era. So I feel like I just kind of, like, disregarded it, and now I'm so happy that I did see it. It was my first watch, which is shocking.
This movie has, like, the energy of, if I had watched it when I was, like, 13, 14, I know it would have been, like, a staple for, like, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I first heard about this movie through, surprise, surprise, Tumblr.com. It has all the makings of
a Tumblr classic.
A forgotten Tumblr classic. I mean, they love Treasure Planet too. The collective Tumblr user base. Yeah.
Is there a lot of Robert De Niro on the Tumblr?
Of course.
Okay. Yes.
Of course.
I think this is the first movie I bought on iTunes.
Whoa.
Wow.
Just to have an iTunes library.
Okay. Yeah. What's your first?
The first Hunger Games.
Okay, not bad. Mine is very whatever I was of the year. It was Step Brothers, specifically.
God.
A fine film. But it's fine.
To be the first thing that you own.
I know. It's fine. It was like that. I think it was, God, it might have been one of the Hangovers. It was messy.
You're such an alpha vibes.
Yeah.
Oh, very much so. I was really trying to project, if you couldn't tell, in like that era. I was like, I'm so masculine. I'm covering up everything that I actually love. Look at me.
Jordan's had a really incredible character arc over the last 20 plus years.
Yeah.
Every time I hear stories about you from like high school,
we were talking about this literally last night. Yeah.
It's okay. If you're a different person, if you're the same person that you were in high school when you're an adult, we need to have a discussion.
That's true. Yes.
Unless you like Stardust. I was going to say, unless you're a Stardust stan, then it's fine.
I mean, me still liking this movie for like entirely, I feel like I like it for entirely different reasons now, which is just that we don't have stuff like this anymore.
Yes.
And it's letting actors who I was not as familiar with at the time just be wacky, whereas I don't really care about the young people in it. And now that I've, of course, like also turned on Neil Gaiman.
Wait, so is this from... Give us your Gaiman.
I know. I feel like I want to hear the beef.
Oh, it's mostly sort of like Amanda Palmer centric. Okay. I do tend to believe that kind of marked a significant downfall in his writing as well.
Yeah.
But for a while, I was just keeping up with all the Gaiman releases, and I was a really big fan of his short stories. And I loved Good Omens. But part of me wonders if the thing I loved about Good Omens, which is still probably my favorite Gaiman, is the Terry Pratchett of it all.
Yeah, I feel like I am much more familiar with like his actual adapted work to screen, and like, I don't know, I feel like similar to what you were talking about with the Stardust like book itself, there's always more interesting like ideas than the actual execution. Like, I love the American God show, which is a mess, but I love it. It's my mess, you know? And
yeah.
I love the Good Omen show, and I thought that this was very nice. And like, I think that the world creation is what is so exciting, and then the execution is like very dependent on like whoever's deciding to adapt. So
yeah. As someone who really like grew up liking fantasy and then all the like twists on fantasy, so like not only like Ella Enchanted, but like whatever, the like two princesses of B'Var kind of stuff.
So good.
Like, Gaiman was like a good step up from that, because it was like, what if fantasy was like a little twisted? And then I just feel like I outgrew a lot of it. And like, now I sort of go to like a Kelly Link or like an Angela Carter, who's doing like an even more fucked up thing. Now I'm like, Neil Gaiman's not fucked up enough for me.
He's like, he's not twisted. What's he doing?
I feel you. I love fucked up fantasy. You know, fucked up genre. It's my favorite. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. It's nice. And now there's like actual adult fantasy lit that is like popular and like gaining a lot of traction. That's also good, because a lot of it is bad. But like, there is stuff that's like actually good. It's very nice.
It's so curious looking at Vaughn and Jane Goldman, who like adapted it, because they work together so much. It's like, she did the Kick-Asses, the X-Men's, the Kingsmen's. Miss Peregrine and Rebecca. But like, they basically are like side by side. So I wonder like how much of it was her or him, or if it was like the two of them together. Because like, separately, I don't know if either of them are as successful. So it feels like the two of them as like a pair are able to work really well together.
Gaiman is the one who recommended her to Matthew Vaughn. So that's interesting.
I'm glad that she's continued to work with him. I love that X-Men movie too. First Class.
It's like one of the better ones. It's so good.
What is the best one?
X-Men?
Is it Days of Future Past, or is that the
I feel bad like that's one? A controversial one. I feel like people either say like X2 or First Class. Okay. I mean, like, I love Logan because it's obviously a Western we love.
Okay, enough.
I've maybe only seen like three or four X-Men movies total, so I can't really survey. I definitely like First Class best of everything that I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's charming.
I need to marathon.
Also, good Kevin Bacon.
Yo, love. I need to marathon them all because I haven't seen a single one.
That's not
surprising.
January
Jones is like made of glass.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the last time anyone saw her.
Other than her Instagram, which is incredible. Yeah. Which is getting me
performance
through
art
the pandemic.
In
yeah.
and of itself.
No, but I just, yeah, the Jane Goldman thing I feel like is so interesting. She was supposed to do one of the Game of Thrones adaptations, and it was the one that got axed, and now they're doing the Targaryen one. So I'm so curious about what her Game of Thrones would have been, because like you look at Stardust and you look at like Kingsman, and like they all have similar like thematic overtones and stuff like that. So it would have been cool. I don't know. I'm less excited for Targaryen stuff versus something that might have been like more fantasy adjacent, you know?
Olivia Cooke is there, so we'll be tuning in. My only requirement to watch a show. I very seriously considered watching Slow Horses on Apple TV, even though it does not look like an interesting show, but she's there.
Is that
I thought about it.
Which one?
Apple
is that?
TV is so fake to me.
It's so fake.
It's not real. It actually doesn't exist.
They have the Essex Serpent coming up. I'm very excited.
Is Essex Serpent fantasy or is it period?
So it's period, but they're like may or may not be a
fantasy
monster
elements.
In the lake, maybe, but it's about a man grappling with his faith,
wow,
played by Tom
shocking.
Hiddleston. And Claire Danes is there as, I think, like a feminist researcher who's like, women should be able to research. So,
oh my God. But the question is,
so obviously,
can
I'm gonna
women
watch
be
all
on balloons?
It. That's too deep of a
everyone
cut,
remembers this movie.
Everyone remembers another fake service, the dark early days of Amazon Prime.
Well, if you're speaking about like period Orlando Bloom, there's like Carnival or Carnivale.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Isn't that
Carnival Row?
Okay, wow.
Orlando Ooh. Bloom and Cara Delevingne.
Everyone's two favorite stars.
That show is maybe the most it doesn't exist show to ever exist.
I don't know a soul.
I
haven't even seen a preview of what that show is.
I saw one billboard when I was living in Echo Park in Los Angeles that I would pass, and that's all I have for context of the show, where it was just like the two of them on it in the name, and that's all I know.
Yeah.
And so
I followed Orlando Bloom on Instagram for a long time, basically up until he and Katy Perry got together, and he would post about filming the show constantly. and it seemed like he was having a great time doing it.
Well, that's good for him then.
But it was like he shot it, and then like I never heard about it ever again in my life.
Yeah, you're like, oh, poor Orlando.
I think it really speaks to maybe the Charlie Cox and Claire Dane careers, though, that we're talking about Orlando Bloom, who is not in this movie.
No, he could be,
but
he could be the Henry Cavill in this movie.
Henry Cavill, young Henry Cavill, who is about to reunite with Matthew Vaughn for Argylle.
Yes,
his upcoming actioner, which looks fun.
Oh yeah, sure. That has Dua Lipa in it.
Does it actually?
Yeah, I sort of looked this up. I was like, what the fuck is this? She's in the list.
I can't wait.
Britain's favorite
actor.
I think I heard through the development grapevine that she was like looking to break into acting like pretty aggressively.
As everyone does,
so,
yes.
She found it.
Great.
We heard
can't wait.
At one point that both of the Hadids were looking to break into acting, and we were like, okay, thank you so much for that piece of information. And then we politely moved on.
The only question is, though, will Dua's performance be better than Camila Cabello in one of the top five most popular films of 2021?
Cinderella.
It'll be a tough
guess. We'll have
grapple.
To wait and see. By the way, a cheap knockoff of Ella Enchanted, which is a much better Cinderella jukebox
I've
musical.
Never seen. I only ever read.
Oh, a great book. The movie, I don't think, is as good as the book, but it's pretty good. It's pretty ridiculous. It's very early 2000s like CGI ridiculousness. Gotta throw in some like modern pop culture references that are like totally anachronistic just to make sure we have the kids. But Hugh Dancy is there, so obviously I love it.
Love him.
Anyways, circling back to
this movie
Stardust, a good film.
It's because it's like it is like it's very good and it's very charming, but it is kind of like, you know, you have all the average fantasy business, so it's I think it's more interesting to talk about
the stuff surrounding
state of
it.
The world. I mean, I think the space pirates that harvest lightning are like
lightning pirates,
far and away
yes.
the absolute coolest part.
It's the best part, yes. Yeah. Or Michelle, I live for anything she does.
Yeah. This was a great era of Michelle, because this is
really
like Hairspray Michelle too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
truly
like,
wonderful performance.
It's sort of like when you wish the Oscars gave her the second chance Oscar, because she's now never going to get an Oscar. So it's like you sort of wish in this pocket, like she obviously has the early career stuff where you're like, she should have had it for Baker Boys or whatever. But like this Bloom period where she's doing like the big sort of commercial stuff, but also giving like nice performances, you're like, there could be a way in there to get something, you know?
If there was any justice in the world, Hairspray would have gotten actual awards attention, but it didn't.
That movie's so good.
It's
She's so fucking in the pocket also
in
that movie.
We didn't know how good we had it. Like, everyone perfectly understands what that movie is.
Adam Shankman delivers the goods.
one of James Marsden's best performances.
Absolutely. Yeah. Zac Efron's great in it. Mm-hmm. Amanda Bynes.
Yeah. And
anytime I see this preview for the Zac Efron Firestarter, I'm like, what are we what are we doing? Put him in a musical.
Where
did
we go wrong?
That movie does not, it's like, it's going to drop and no one will remember it in like 5 years. It's crazy.
Yeah
That movie comes out like this week. Spoiler alert, ever recording, but like, it's not gonna
it doesn't, very much doesn't exist. He was wonderful in The Greatest Showman, and that is what he needs to do more of, even though I think that,
well, I just don't think he can play serious. Like, he's so good in The Beach Bum too, when he's just like dumb idiot. You know,
but not too dumb as in Baywatch, another crime against humanity. That movie, truly horrible.
Anyways,
I read again in my very valuable IMDb trivia that Michelle Pfeiffer's role in the book is like very small, and when they cast her, they were like, okay, we're gonna like beef up the role Michelle, and like make this a thing.
That sounds right. It's been so long.
I mean, like we said, the central couple are not that interesting, so I think the more villain slash side character time you can dedicate, the better, because like, what else are we looking at?
In the book, do you remember if Captain Shakespeare is quote-unquote queer-coded?
I don't remember that being the case, but I could be wrong. That feels... I mean, we should just talk about that.
That's
just crazy.
It's insane.
That's mostly why we're here.
Yeah. Like, of all the things, it's truly a transcendent.
Yeah, it's so good. And, like, Robert De Niro is so good in this movie, and he doesn't have very many scenes, but,
he's in, like, 15 minutes, maybe, max?
Yeah. They meet him very late in, like, their
quest.
Adventure.
Yeah.
But I was so surprised. I was already delighted, and then we got to the classical music sword fighting scene, ups the ante so much more. But
his reveal,
so good.
Okay.
The reveal is great.
Let's just talk about it. Yes. Fran, when you're in the theater, you're a teenager, this happens. What do you do? How do you react?
I mean, I'm ashamed to admit this. I'm almost positive this is the first time I've seen Robert De Niro in a movie.
Wow.
When I was 16.
Okay.
I wasn't seeing like Meet the Parents and all the sort of big iconic stuff I didn't probably see till college or soon after. And so I do think I knew who he was, but had never seen him in anything. Like, I understood the irony of the casting.
Yeah.
And as a teenager, this is when I was like, okay, this movie's genius. This is the smartest movie I've ever seen. It really sort of like stunned me, because it feels like it's such an obvious turn now where I'd be like, oh, okay. So something we think is one thing is actually the opposite.
Right.
But even on rewatch, like, I don't think that character is particularly well written, and I think you can tell that an actual gay person has come nowhere near what that character is.
Yes.
However, I think De Niro is great in
it.
Agree. And I think he's having a lot of fun, and I think he's treating it with a lot of earnestness.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, in doing some, like, research or whatever, in reading, the first like article I came across was top 5 most unrealistic depictions of gay characters, and like this was on the list, which is so funny because like it's just insane. But like the reasons were gay fiction, men like to prance around in women's clothing. Reality, gay men like to prance around in pirate costumes, and they like went on about like how this is like not realistic and how it's like problematic, blah blah blah. I can absolutely see that read, and I think we should talk about like the caricature of it, how people assume, you know what I mean, like conflating homosexuality with like how people dress, things like that. But he is so sincere and actually is not doing it in a way that feels cloying or like sarcastic.
That's
which is why it works, as you were saying. It's like earnest, and if he didn't give that performance, it would be exhausting. Like, you watch Dirty Grandpa or whatever and you're like, he's phoning it in, but I don't think he's phoning this in.
No,
at
oh
all.
God, not at
no,
all.
No, no.
Yeah. because I think that, like, if he was phoning it in, obviously you kind of get, like, asleep at the wheel, De Niro. But you can also, like, I don't know, the other side of phoning it in is, like, playing a character way too big and, like, right, not actually thinking about, like, the subtlety that you can, like, drop in. And I think he does that very well. And you never get the sense that he, I mean, fucking hopefully he's not embarrassed if he took this role in the first place, but, like, anything like that.
There's no, like, discernible contempt, I feel, from either him or the movie towards this character, which is kind of what saves it. They're not really making a huge social justice point. But I also think, like, the movie, thankfully, like, the movie doesn't hate this guy and the movie doesn't punish this guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what it does at the end, I think, is, like, really kind of tender.
So good.
Where, like, all of the guys are like, we always knew you were a whoopsie or whatever, but, like, you're still our captain, you know? And it's like, that's kind of, like, tender. And it's like the crew knew that he was gay, but they don't care. And, like, they're still behind him.
And they don't
him.
Have to, like, have dialogue about it either.
Right. Exactly. They're like, we're going to have a big conversation.
Let's just do our jobs. Yeah. I started watching The Staircase. Have you guys started The Staircase yet?
I have not yet.
Not yet.
How is it? How is
I shouldn't
is
say
it?
Anymore. No, oh, it's great. I mean, I love those docs. But that is also dealing in very, like, mid-aughts views on gay people is kind of a big part of it in a way that feels both so dated, but also I think that those attitudes are coming back in a really scary and dangerous way. But it's interesting to see something like Stardust that I think, like, is not trying to be overtly political, but in its goofiness, I think is saying more than a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think this about, like, have you guys covered Rock and Rolla?
We have not.
But it is probably on our list.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Has a very similar sort of gay plot line to this.
Okay.
Classic. Of, like, a tough guy actually Ritchie. Being gay. And they're actually like, that's fine.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
Nice.
We have nothing to say about that. Especially compared to, like, recent Guy Ritchie, which I think has, like, teetered back into.
Yeah,
yep.
You know? Yeah.
We've all seen the fucking gay. Oh,
yeah.
Have we?
Yeah, we maybe he maybe overcorrected a little too much there.
Gulag for Jeremy Strong.
Oh God, such a because there's, like, two good performances in that movie as well, which makes it even more frustrating. Like, Hugh Grant and Charlie Hunnam are having, like, a delightful time together.
Yeah,
and then everything outside of that, you're like, I don't know about this.
Yeah,
and especially because, like, I think those guys are playing quite queer.
Yes.
Those guys are playing ex-boyfriends in that movie.
Guy Ritchie is the best in his zone where he is two men who are playing exes
two
and
men
they have
who
to
are
work together.
Just in love.
Like, that's all of Sherlock Holmes. That's all
Man
of that
from
movie.
Uncle. Man from Uncle. Yeah.
Yes, Man
An
from
absolute
Uncle.
Classic.
Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know. When we talked about Sherlock Holmes, there's, like, some Guy Ritchie quote where he was like, yeah, I've been not accused necessarily, but he's like, yeah, people have brought up that I have a lot of, like, homoerotic undertones in my filmography. It is what it is. And then he just kind of moves
it.
On. So, but I love it. I like it when it happens. And by the way, I feel like with the Captain Shakespeare character, it's at least, like, more interesting than probably, like, a good chunk of whatever they could have, like, done with that character. Like, I think the reversal is very fun because Michelle Pfeiffer is basically playing, like, a straight up villain, as is Mark Strong. So I think, like, you need kind of, like, that father
twist,
figure type business to happen with the twist. Yeah.
Yeah, and that you have, like, a gay man teaching a straight man how to be more masculine,
yeah.
I think is quite beautiful. It's all very queer eye, but it's, like, it's really kind of nice.
It's, like, it's not saying anything potent or, like, shocking, you know, that's, like, a revelation, but it is, like, nice to hear. Like, if I was a teenager and saw this or whatever, I would be like, oh, that's, like, kind of cool, and, like, it's an interesting, you know, look at, like, masculinity in some way, and, like, obviously maybe it's a caricature of sorts, but I don't know. Like, we kind of talked about this with In and Out, where it's like Kevin is playing such a classical, like, stereotypical gay man, and, like, while that could be detrimental to the movie, it ultimately, the movie knows about it and it's just, like, so light in its tone that it works, you know. And I feel like that's what's also working for this movie as well.
Yeah. Like we said, I think it's to Stardust's benefit that it's not like, oh, this is now a whole thing. That it is just, like, an aspect of the character. And, like, there's nothing better than, like, a wholesome pirate crew. You know what I mean?
I mean,
like,
all pirate crews are also gay. We all know
of
this.
Course. Yes.
Right.
Like, this idea, I love that it's just like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, we stick together. Like, we're a crew. That's what we do. Like, this is a non-issue, even though, like, you thought it maybe was an issue. I also love that his first mate is, like, the only one in on it.
Oh, for sure. Essentially. Yeah.
Dexter Fletcher.
Oh, yes.
That went over my head. Holy shit. That's so funny.
I remember I saw him in the cast list and then I was like, oh, I have to remember like to figure out who he plays because I have no idea what the man looks like. And yeah.
Forget that he also acts. That's always wild.
It's so weird that he acts.
Yeah.
He's apparently doing Sherlock Holmes 3.
Apparently.
Yes. We have it's nuts. Well,
in development hell for years and years.
The movie will never
I'll believe
out.
It when I see it. I would love to see it.
I would kill to see it. There's like some very, very backdoor internet rumor that Jordan dug up that like Holmes and Watson are supposed to like become a couple in that movie, which once again, I will believe it when
Jude
I see
Law's
it.
In his gay era.
Yes. He really, oh, he is. And it should be in a better movie, which is more frustrating.
Yeah.
You're like, if you're going to do this, why not give us something better? Like, give us another Ripley. Mm-hmm. Like, we need that.
I mean, yeah.
He has a very good, like, I mean, this is the highest of compliments. He has a very good, like, ratio in his career to, like, times he has played
a gay to straight ratio.
Because, you know, Ripley, obviously. And then, like, Secrets of Dumbledore. Yeah. But he's in this Stephen Fry Oscar Wilde movie where he doesn't play Oscar Wilde, but he plays someone else. I don't remember who it is, but I mostly know it from GIFs because he is very young and very hot.
Shocking.
I gotta see that.
Yeah.
That sounds delightful, though.
And Sherlock Holmes, of course. So, yeah, it's good. Stephen Fry was...
I was just saying, wasn't he supposed to
direct the original choice?
No. Yes, yeah.
For Captain Shakespeare, but Matthew Vaughn, Galaxy Brain, was like, I really want De Niro or Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson would be...
I think the correct choice
casting
was made.
Yeah.
I do think Jack Nicholson's portrayal would have been homophobic.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I don't...
Well, it's because, like, De Niro's is knowing, and it's comment... It's one of the best things when it's, like, commenting upon your idea of an actor and, like, what the baggage they're bringing into it. Like, you know, like, so many performances by him are all about hyper-masculinity, and so when you have this hyper-masculine, like, cultural figure subvert that, you're immediately into it no matter what.
And, like, be in the pocket for it.
Right.
Yeah. And I think the other thing about De Niro is, like, outside of Raging Bull, like, he's quite a delicate presence.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's not, like, hulking and big. He's sort of, like, deft and small and often very slight. Like, I just think, like, Nicholson is big, both as, like, an actor and as a guy.
As
and
a
I think
person,
it would have felt like a whole thing.
Yeah. And I, like, love the way that De Niro, like, carries himself in this and, like, the way that his, like, speech pattern changes. Again, it's, like, I actually think it's quite, like, good and subtle because you understand what he is trying to, like, get across, but it does not feel like he's just, like, doing the limp wrist thing. Like, it actually feels like he's putting in, like, a full-bodied performance in, like, a lot of different areas. And by the way, it totally works. Like, he's a lovely character. Like, I think he drops into the movie, even though this movie has barely any stakes, like, drops into the movie at, like, a point where you're like, yeah, these kids could, like, probably use a break. And it's nice. He makes them tea. He teaches them how to waltz.
Teaches them how to fight.
Gives them makeovers. Yeah. Teaches Charlie Cox how to fight. And, like, reconciles with his crew at the end of the day.
Sort of a gunkle role.
Yes.
That's like 90% of the Letterboxd reviews were like, queer uncle icon. You're just like, yes,
the gunkle,
that's all this is giving. But it works. And I mean, I think what you were saying about the subtlety is like those quiet moments. Like, I feel like if it was just going to be so much flash and never like a quiet beat, it wouldn't work. But there's like,
that little
those
montage.
Quiet moments really help. And like, even at the end when he like has that little wink at Henry Cavill and you're like, oh, they're about to
we
go
have
fuck.
To talk about that too.
Oh, yes.
We need to talk about that scene. But
I was actually
like,
not sold until like that happened. And then I was like, yes. No, I mean, like, I was sold, obviously. Yeah. But I guess like I was not expecting him to like appear again to appear and kind of be like, good job, my boy. And I think like the wink to Henry Cavill is
so good.
A very nice addition.
But it's even like the little like arg he gives like after they leave and he's like a little flamboyant and then the crew sort of realizes.
Like,
and then he comes back. It's like that small comedy pop works so well, but it's also like a nice little character moment within it, you know?
It's cute.
But we could talk about the Henry Cavill thing because holy shit.
I'm like, when does Henry Cavill become whatever
Henry
the hell's been
Cavill.
Going on with him lately?
Let's see. Because I
was guess Man of Steel.
It
probably is.
Yeah.
Because he's really low build in this.
Yeah, because he was like nobody.
Yeah.
He's in like some random period dramas.
He's in a Hellraiser. Holy shit.
He's apparently in Red Riding Hood.
His old fake movie.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. And then he's Immortals.
Oh, that's okay. Maybe it's Immortals, probably Immortals. And then Man of Steel as like the 1-2 where he kind of pops, oh,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You can also see baby Henry Cavill in The Count of Monte Cristo from 2002. He is so cute in it.
Who is it? Who's the that's other? That's Leo, isn't that? It? That's Leo, right? No, it's
Jim
not.
Jim Caviezel, Guy Pearce.
I'm thinking of the Caviezel. Same one. What's the fucking Leo one? It's
Man in the Iron Mask.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Oh my
They're
God.
They're always the same thing in my head.
Yes. The trailer's identical.
Yeah. That's Jim Caviezel. We don't have to talk about him.
Jim Caviezel. What? One of the weirdest careers. We're not going to talk about him.
But I feel like Cavill, this is an insane career too. Yeah. And it's like, obviously he's still a big star in The Witcher's the most watched show of all time. But... I don't know, it's just so weird.
I think
he just used to have kind of a range, and now he only does one thing, and I love the one thing that he does, but
he's like being himbo typecast.
I want to see him in A Man from U.N.C.L.E. again, because I think he is straight up incredible in
he's really
that
good
movie.
It.
I love him in that.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Witcher. I'm a huge Witcher stan.
Yeah, me too. But I think he just sort of got locked in that kind of like, I'm serious and brooding and like a little bit fed up with everyone. And like, he's so good in Man from U.N.C.L.E. when he's like a fancy boy who thinks he's better than everyone else. Like he can.
That's what he's doing in like Enola Holmes.
And also that's what he's doing in this.
Oh yeah.
By the way.
Yeah. Wait. Oh, but he's so good in Enola Holmes.
He's
Enola Holmes, great movie.
Charming movie.
Yeah, completely nice.
Can't wait for Enola Holmes 2.
He's
coming
back
out soon.
He's coming back. I don't think Sam Claflin is returning though.
Oh, shocking.
Shocking. It's okay. I mean, like
Sam Claflin's similar career to Charlie Cox, I feel like, where he's like another classic cute white boy who just like kind of exists and
they
then doesn't
even
have a career.
Stuck him in a Pirates of the Caribbean movie just to see if they could do it. I
no
love
Claflin.
It.
Well, he's in Peaky Blinders playing some kind of proto-Nazi.
Well, naturally.
I feel like whenever people talk about Peaky Blinders, it's like the most insane thing because everyone's the opposite of what they should be and like the plot points are just insane.
I really want to watch it. Like I it's a commitment and I like just
feels like a you show.
I think
it's
that
it's not
I,
that big of a commitment.
Really?
You'll get through it. Yeah, there's six episode seasons.
What?
It's the classic British thing where they're like,
Here's
a season and then we're gone and we'll come back in like 4 years.
This is brand new information. I could binge Peaky Blinders right now.
You could whip through it. It's like, the selling point I always give is it's like, it's the craziest and maybe the best Tom Hardy has ever been.
Which is saying something.
Yeah.
And he's playing so against type, but it's, he's the head of the Orthodox Jewish.
I was just saying, he plays Jewish, right? Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. And he looks crazy. And they make him speak more Hebrew than you would think.
Holy shit. Oh my
it's
God.
It's so weird.
I feel like I need to see it just for that.
And it's a truly excellent, like, supporting cast, obviously, aside from the Cillian Murphy of it all.
Yeah.
But, like, Anya Taylor-Joy is in, like, the later
seasons. Oh, yeah. She's bad in it, but that's okay.
I don't know.
Usually, whoever they get to be a villain is great. So you get, like, Sam Neill and Tom Hardy and, like, Patty Considine and Sam Claflin and just,
hits.
Like, I don't know. Oh, Adrian Brody. The the season
yes.
4 with Adrian Brody is so stupid and
I'm
insane.
Now in.
Where they, like, similarly, like, Adrian Brody, who, like, they have doing kind of a budget Godfather Brando type of character, and he's always chewing on a toothpick.
Oh, my God.
And they make him speak so much Italian.
That rules.
And
that's
it's just
amazing.
Like, what is this?
Do you like late period Brody? Because I've like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's so delightful and so good. I like, obviously there's a lot of stuff that might be problematic about him, but like, I feel like I weirdly bought in so early as a kid into like the Adrian Brody stock because of King Kong. Because I saw that at way too formative an age.
Formative.
A formative movie. Like that rings in my head. One of the most nightmarish sequences I've ever seen on film. Like the giant...
The bugs.
Bugs eating Andy Serkis and people. Disgusting. Great.
Horrible.
Though.
I had to leave the theater.
But I bought in so early with that. It's
tween.
Oh my God, yeah. I love this like late period that he's in right now with Succession and all of his like TV shows where he's popping up in like fifth supporting actor category, but he's delivering the goods so well in it. Obviously, Wes Anderson knows how to use him so well. Yeah,
I was
going to
say,
well,
he's always so good in all the Wes Andersons. And, like, I try not to get too down on, like, the homogenization of how people look in Hollywood, but he's still just one of the most interesting looking guys.
Yes, he really is. Like, his face doesn't look like a face looks. It's so... comes in at such a weird angle, and his nose, I love it so much.
I love that this turned into essentially like a character actor breakdown episode, because we were overdue. Yeah,
and it's a movie full of them.
Listen, there, if I feel like once you get into the weeds on like British actor, even though Adrian Brody is not
British, but he like feels British though.
I mean, that's how this all started. Like, you just start thinking about this cast, and then you like spin off and spin off. Like, it's so good. I mean, we talked about Mark Strong's career, I think, on
Mark Strong,
the Sherlock Holmes episode.
Careers. Yes.
Yeah.
Fran, have you guys covered Tinker Tailor on this?
Not yet.
I haven't seen the movie in so long. Does that movie have queer vibes?
There are boyfriends in it.
Fuck. Completely forgot that.
Yeah, okay. Like, the whole thing is that, like, the betrayal happens to boyfriends.
What?
The one boyfriend. That's, like, sort of the big end of that.
That's the juice. That's kind of juice.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's like the movie that we're always like, oh, shit, we went in, we didn't know. That's my favorite kind of.
Fuck, I have to rewatch.
And Benedict Cumberbatch is gay in it also.
Shocking.
Classic.
Another good ally actor. Where
an extremely good gay to straight ratio.
Yeah.
Are they boyfriends at the end, or are they just best friends? I feel like I projected a queerness maybe onto it.
That's how I feel about like Master and Commander, where people are like, oh, he and they're just best friends. And I'm like, gay. No, they play musical instruments together and they're boyfriends.
The
like,
sea
stop.
Is gay. If you are out to sea, you are probably queer.
Yes.
I just gotta say it. Or in an airship.
Lightning
any
pirates.
Sort of ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe they're not boyfriends, but that's fine. Whatever. It's a very good
headcanon. Headcanon.
If you thought that they were boyfriends, that is grounds.
Yeah, and I've seen it like several times also. Yeah. So I think if I remember it that, yeah. Mark Strong, amazing actor.
Incredible.
Very good.
Never phoning it in.
No. I brought this up on our Sherlock Holmes episode, but I just need to know if someone else remembers this. Do you remember the advertisements with him where he was like, it's good to play a villain? And it's like other villain actors?
Yes.
Oh, thank God.
What
yes,
was it
I do.
For?
I think it's like it was watch? For cars or a watch. Yes. Thank you.
That sounds about right.
But that like lives so in my head. But he is so good, always playing either a good villain or the good twist where he becomes like a hero.
Friend.
Yes.
I feel like everyone thinks he's a villain in Ian Kingsman, and then
right.
he's not. And that's
right,
like
just
the
a good
whole
guy.
Like, you're like, oh shit, he like actually is good. And then he gets, you know, blown
does he
to
die?
Bits.
No, I think he lives.
Mm-hmm. He dies in the Golden Circle.
Oh, the second one.
After singing Country Roads. At the top of his
so
lungs.
Weird. That was the summer Country Roses is the only song anyone knew.
Logan Lucky.
That movie is wild. I
one of the most disrespectful uses of Channing Tatum ever.
Yeah.
That movie suck, but
yeah.
It's not good.
Mark Strong is good in it.
He is.
He's also very good in this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The thing that really cracked Mark Strong open to me was Shazam, a movie I don't even like that much, but he is like...
Mm-hmm.
Just so in the pocket.
Yes.
I knew I was forgetting something. I was like, he has played some sort of Marvel or DC villain. Like, why don't I remember? And of course,
Shazam.
It's Shazam. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to have to play like a big blockbuster villain, you might as well play like a magical wizard.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like that part of the movie works so well, too, because it's like kind of scary. And like, I love when like a kids movie or like quote unquote kids movie or whatever is like a little
four
freaky.
Quadrant film.
Yeah.
One could
and like,
say.
I love like the little demon dog things, whatever that they have going where they look kind of goopy, but like kind of 80s adjacent, you know. I don't know. Mark Strong, good.
Yeah,
love him in this.
Yeah,
I like that whole subplot with the brothers. I think it's so funny.
It is hilarious. There's like all these little bits that I think like there's a lot of attention, like detail paid to that family, where obviously like all of their names line up and like the order that they're born. Always love that. Great bit. But like they have like little decorations on all of their outfits that
the correspond
to like the numbers, yes, the way that they died, and they all bleed blue blood, I assume because they're like the royal bloodline.
Great.
Very good. The poisoning sequence, I love it. Like
great.
That's working for me. As much as I love Michelle Pfeiffer, I think that like her villain storyline is probably the worst.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the most stereotypical where you're just like,
what do women fear?
aging. Yeah. There was some like conversation online, and I guess you could read into it about her being like lesbian coded and having
this?
Yes, and having like a predatory quote unquote lesbian vibe, which I did not pick up on at all.
I feel like it's a classic kind of like, oh, I, an older woman, envy the youth and beauty of a younger woman in a slightly predatory way, but like not really.
But like, I could, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think I pick up on that. It's just, yeah, it's quite shallow. And it's like,
yeah.
But like, she eats it up, like, the first time when she turns young and she's checking out her great. Butt. I'm like, this is great. Like, you are delivering the goods you need to be delivering.
She's very good. They could just, like, they could give her more and she would, like, continue.
Of course, yeah.
To serve. I also thought that there was maybe, like, a late stage villain reversal coming. Sorry, the like fantasy movie fooled me when she like starts crying at the end. I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is a movie where like everyone just becomes friends. Like that would be nice. And then it's not the case. But I don't know.
She gets yeeted by a star.
I was kind of craving it because it is a pretty like actually an extremely one-dimensional character. Like you don't get any like third act insight into anything and then I was like, okay, maybe like she is trying to build this like sense of community or family and she just wants to live forever because like, you know, she likes being with her sisters. Nope, she just is evil. But
I don't know, sometimes it's fine just to have a villain to be a villain. I don't know, I feel like I buy into that more with like fantasy movies, sort of. Even like Princess Bride, I'm forgetting his name, who's the villain in that.
Which one? Prince Humperdinck? There's so many. The six-fingered man. Like, you have to be more specific.
I know. The guy who...
Wallace
Shawn? Montoya fights at the end.
The six-fingered man.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah, but like, he is just like such a clear villain just to be a villain, but it works so well just because you're like classic, you know what I mean? So you just, I don't know. I just buy into... I feel like with fantasy movies, like my expectations are lower.
Yes.
Than, or not like lower. I just like want... I'm buying into the world more, so I just care more about like the ride than necessarily like every character having to be like this full bodied. I don't know.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. I think that is like the popular opinion. I think that that's a completely valid opinion to have.
I just want to escape sometimes to a lighthearted world.
How I always pitch the stuff that I like want to do though, is that I'm like, I want like all the big like four quadrant fantasy, but I want like the character growth and depth of like an HBO prestige drama. Like I think you can have it all.
Oh, of course.
You can't have it all, but I don't mind if you don't. Like, just a fun fantasy ride is the best.
No, absolutely. Just to bring it back to De Niro.
Yes.
Do we think that it has aged well or not?
Yes. I say yes.
Oh, probably not. No.
I say yes because, like, I watched... This was also the first time that I had watched this movie. I don't have, like, any nostalgia attached to it. And I just, like... I thought it was very charming. I don't mind something that like could read stereotypical if you feel like we talked about, if you feel like sort of like the collective production is at least respectful of it. Yes, we maybe could have used some more gay people a little closer, but
one gay person on set.
I don't know. It definitely didn't stand out as egregious to me. And like, I was very charmed by him. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit of an easy mark because like you give me a gay pirate, I'm pretty into it.
Shocking.
Regardless of what the
like
depiction
Black Sails?
Is. I do. Great little show called Our Flag Means Death. Mm. Popping off. The first time that I had seen Stardust mentioned in years was recently on TikTok where someone was like, Captain Shakespeare walked so Steed Bonnet of Our Flag Means Death could run. It was Yeah.
Maybe it's aging fine. This might just be my own bias because I'm just like, we don't have the type of gay person that this is sort of representing isn't a type of gay person that I would argue actually exists, but maybe that's my own kind of like biases about this. I think a lot about like, there's like those old gay guys on TikTok, the old gays, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
And people hate them because they do like Spawn and commercials, but I'm also like, these guys have seen so much in their lives, leave them alone, which is maybe sort of the deal with Captain Shakespeare, where I'm like, this guy's probably seen some shit. Who am I to say that his life is wrong? I don't know. I don't know. I'm kind of encouraged to hear both you guys and people on TikTok be like, this is fine.
Well, it's like, I think it's like, my question is like, I don't know if it's like, it's fun, I have a delightful time, it's like, I just don't know if you're into like, just, I'm just trying to think of like, in today's landscape, do you even like have a character that you can like role reverse like this? Because I feel like this was such a product of the time where it'd be like such a masculine person and like, psych, they're gay and like, or they're like kind of flamboyant, you know, like, I don't know if that.
I think that
happens anymore or
I think they lampshade it very well because the idea is that he's keeping up this reputation for his crew and then it's revealed that the crew doesn't mind and you should just be like who you are authentically. Right, right. But you also get a sense that he like his name is Captain Shakespeare. He likes the performance aspect of it.
Well, he has the line where he goes, I'm thinking great English wordsmith. My enemies are thinking Shakespeare.
I love it. I don't know. I just think that like, I think that we can put too much pressure on, you know, depictions of queer coded people. But I do, yes, I would say if this movie came out today, it would probably be a different conversation. But I would say it, I think in the actual aging question is slightly different than like, if you release this today, would you do the same thing?
Well, I just don't today. Yeah. Definitely not. It would not happen at all. Yeah.
I don't know. Once again, maybe
I don't know. That's the thing. It was like you were saying, Fran, like the staircase is doing sort of similar thing, like its relationship with gay characters or.
Oh, I just think it's both discussing and showing that like mid-aughts Bush era relationship with gayness. Where we're just not all the way there.
Yeah.
And how latent homophobia is in the culture, and that homophobia or like homosexuality is seen as like a rejection of heterosexuality and like a heterosexual like lifestyle. But that's like, that feels so old world, like evangelical kind of like, this is a sin. Whereas, like, this feels like being gay is just, like, sometimes putting on a dress and being a little fruity. And it's like, okay, well, that's not what that is either. And so both, I mean, I think Staircase is, like, engaging with a dialogue on it a little bit. But this just also feels like the level of, I mean, this is, like, getting into my sort of, like, I don't really like Queer Eye. But I think Queer Eye is also dealing with like a very dated impression of like what a gay lifestyle is and like vying for acceptance of a thing that is not happening, I perceive that much. But I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily bad.
Yeah. No, I think that... Oh, sorry,
I think
that's
I was just going to say, I think that is a very good call with like tying in the Queer Eye of it all. Because there is certainly a sort of like lifestyle aspect that is just... dated and just I think that it reminds me of when they rebooted the L Word and they were like the L Word Generation Q, like the definition has expanded, like it's not about this like lifestyle anymore, it's just the fact that like a bunch of people are queer and we're all just kind of hanging out, which I think like in and of its has its own issues like within that. I don't know, it's very difficult, even though this is what we do every week, it's very difficult to talk about queer issues in like an up-to-date way because like there are so many varying like
The conversations all evolving and stuff. I don't know, I think it's I agree, I think it's super interesting. I feel like where we are as a culture is like the conversation around queerness within the media is so interesting because in, like in
interesting
movies,
is certainly interesting a word the, for like, it right now choice, right. Yeah,
but it's just like
a lot right now.
Like, because there's that thing we've talked about where it's like sometimes you have a queer creator behind a project, but then the project itself, what it's saying about queerness is not necessarily like forward thinking. And it's sort of just more like trying to appease to a more like heterosexual crowd and just be like, look, queerness is the same as like being straight. You know, it's like there's no difference or whatever.
There is
and,
no lifestyle adjustment.
Right. Right. Or like, I just think there's like so many like layers to unpack about it within movies. And this is obviously not the movie about like examining that or anything like that, but
there is
makes
like,
you think about it.
You know?
I mean, the Captain Shakespeare like arc, if you can say that there is one, is also essentially just a coming out arc, which feels and that's the really like retrograde thing. I think of like I had like a childhood friend who used to sometimes send me cards for Pride Month where I was just like, that's not sort of what the deal is with Pride Month, but it's not like ill intention. I was just sort of like, What, like, congratulations on your lifestyle, like, whatever was going
on. It's kind of amazing.
I was going to say that's Yeah. What? It's wholesome in a way, but also like
yeah. Right, like that's not that in it, but also it's not it either.
Right.
And,
right.
And I think about like, I think in my sort of limited experience in just like the industry trying to pitch gay stories that were not about like a coming out narrative, like I think especially like in sort of a having a queer background and thinking about the way we tell queer stories, I was like, you know, the older I get, the queer people I know are not concerned about like having a conversation with their parents. I mean, I obviously understand that that is sort of the concern for some, but they're also figuring out like, okay, like gay marriage was legalized. What does that actually mean for me? Is that right. something I want? Like, to what extent do we want like domestic homosexuality to mirror domestic heterosexuality, like things like that? But like, we're just not really anywhere close to like actually exploring or digging into those things in art. Or every now and then we do. Like, I think something like Love is Strange, which is like a great little movie, is about like older gay lifestyle, but we are so like, we like, I feel like things are just still so caught up on coming out narrative.
Oh, I totally agree.
100%, yes.
There's a
and
great...
I think the more retrograde society gets, the more we have to keep having things like this.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a great episode of The Other Two, incredible show where...
Amazing show.
Carrie, who's like a gay character, and his sort of boyfriend go like apple picking with a series, with a couple, a gay couple who are like very... quote unquote traditionally domestic, and like they have this whole like husband's like Instagram, and it's all dedicated to like the fact that they have like this beautiful like domestic like lifestyle, yeah. But they do everything together. They like brush each other's teeth, like all of the stuff, and the everything they have is matching.
Oh my gosh.
And it's this idea of like, oh my god, like the claw of like, you know, heterosexuality is like descending on like this gay lifestyle. It's a great episode. But yeah, I think that that is an aspect to it. That's why actually I love queer characters in like big genre stuff like sci-fi and fantasy, because it lets you basically put like your pre-existing notions of things like lifestyle into a different world and like do an interpretation of that. And it can be a very baseline interpretation like Captain Shakespeare and a coming out narrative, but it can also be like, okay, are we creating a society where like it's totally quote unquote normalized? Are we making it a thing in this world? Are we ignoring it completely? Like, how do you choose to reflect the like views of traditional real world society, or do you not?
Right.
Yeah, I read a book. It wasn't a very good book, but I read a book recently where like it was like a traditional kind of like old world fantasy, but everyone was same sex couples because children born out of wedlock were considered like an abomination. It was a background thing. It wasn't like, and the protagonist is a child born like out of wedlock.
Right.
Like
right.
It was a background thing, but I thought that like that was interesting because it's like repression but in the opposite way, but the book did a good job not having it be like the issue of like the actual book. Anyway, it's very interesting. You can it's do like, a lot. People should be more creative about it, but like you said, Fran, I don't think that we're quite there artistically.
What as you were saying, it's like so much of what's happening now is like we're caught up in the coming out narrative, and I think like people, I don't know, as a queer person, it's kind of exhausting at this point, just because like coming out is obviously everyone's individual thing, but it's like, how many times can you sort of say that story when there's so many other stories that are more engaging? And it's like, while coming out is important, like ultimately, like you just want to like normalize queer characters, and just like having a character be queer on screen is just like better than the whole thing revolving around a coming out narrative. Like, would it be better in this if Shakespeare wasn't coming out? I don't know, etc. Probably not for the movie, but like, you know, on the whole, thinking about like arcs and stuff,
it's very cute to have like this crew acceptance business, right? But it is like, yeah, a again, they could definitely put a worse point on it. They could definitely have it be like a bigger deal, like it is kind of like a casual, oh, we kind of always knew, it's fine, it doesn't bother us type thing. But yeah, also the reality is, for I think a lot of like the generation Q, if you will, that like coming out is not just like this big momentous thing you do with your parents. It's something that you do to like everyone that you meet for the rest of your life. And it's like just a very different like style and like level and like interpretation. So yeah, let's see more of it. More of everything.
Yeah, I haven't watched like Heartbreaker.
I haven't either.
Heartstopper? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or Heartstopper, yeah, on Netflix. But I had a non-queer friend watch who was like confused about part of it because the character didn't come out. And I was like, they don't, like, coming out is just a very straight desire.
Yeah.
To like have to like announce this about yourself. And I think that like someone's like, well, I don't know how to feel about this character because I don't explicitly know something about them. It's like, you're not going to explicitly know something about everyone you ever meet in your life, right, either.
Yeah. Yeah, just deal with it. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah.
That's interesting. That was the read. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting when you get into like how you're portraying like that kind of stuff on screen. Cause it's like, well, do we want to like definitively signify this to the audience in some way? Which is why I think the coming out narrative, or at least like some sort of coming out or a reveal, basically, is so common for queer characters on screen. Because it's like, well, how else are we going to know? Like, how else are we going to like convey it to the audience for whether, regardless of like what the intentions are to actually convey that.
I think it sort of plays to straight panic as well, where it's like so many people would be so upset, like similar with this with like Reputations. It's like the reveal of someone being gay, being like so unsettled by it and being like, oh my God, I can't believe this person's gay, versus like it not being such a big deal. And the fact that it sort of still perpetuates where it is like a big deal if someone's gay and you don't know. You know, where it ultimately, or where it should just be like, oh, like it's just like a nothing, you know?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Captain Shakespeare says in this, he's like, reputations, they take years to cultivate and only a few seconds to destroy. And then like is so devastated when his reputation is like seemingly destroyed. Regardless of the fact that Mark Strong does not seem to give like a single fuck. It's more just like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And then immediately dives out a window. So.
Great. Love it.
It's more about like the reputation, how he is worried about like how his friends, how the crew, like how it will damage their relationship with him as opposed to like his reputation on the whole, which is interesting. I don't know.
A lot of layers, man.
Way more layers than I was expecting. But I don't know. I would watch this again. Absolutely. I'd watch it many more times. I think I would be delighted every time. And sometimes it's like I will choose to just set aside being like, okay, but like we can think about this, we can like analyze this and be like, if I enjoy it and like if I'm having a good time regardless of kind of like what the interpretation is, I don't know, that's art. You can choose to engage with it on different levels at different times, to a degree of severity, or you can just enjoy it. Or you can do all of it.
You can do whatever you want.
You do it all.
I'm just curious to see how art going forward has queer characters, as we always say every episode.
Every episode.
It's so interesting to see how big four quadrant movies portray queerness, because it is always such a lovely minefield.
Yeah. Have you guys covered Ambulance yet?
No, but we have talked.
We have talked about it on a couple episodes.
How do you feel?
First ever Michael Bay movie about a gay guy.
I know.
Yes.
Other than
Pain and Gain.
They were definitely exes in college.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
1,000%.
I think Ambulance is hilarious. I think it rocks.
Yeah. The movie fucking rules.
I had a great time.
I think Jake is so funny, and that character is so hysterical and histrionic. And when the head of the, like, Mexican crime family that they know is on the phone with him and he says K-drama at some point. I've been saying K-drama. K-drama about everything. Very K-drama.
I love that movie, which is like the last movie that I ever thought I would love, but I actually think it's like a great Jake
Gyllenhaal
like
performance.
It's like
that's your character development is the, like,
well,
turning
it's probably
around and
the
liking,
only,
I'm saying
only
you
one.
Love Pain and Gain.
Yeah, I actually really want to see Pain and Gain. But I think that we could absolutely do like a 2-hour retrospective on Jake Gyllenhaal's performance in that
Ambulance,
movie.
Yes.
The international implications.
But
if you
the
will.
Gay character, it is so fascinating looking at how Michael Bay approaches a gay character and how it's like very straight coded similarly, because they're like kind of domestic while they're also kind of gay. But like you buy the most queer tension between Jake Gyllenhaal and him. Like that's the biggest read versus him and his husband or anything, you know?
And that everyone keeps making jokes about him being like a leftist liberal, like, right, who lives in Santa Monica or whatever.
I think it's Highland Park.
Oh, Highland Park. Yeah. Right. And they're like, oh, yeah, of course. It's very funny. But also, like, that is sort of, like, the pitfall with, I don't know, having to put the pressures and thoughts of modern society onto, like, your queer characters, is that, like, it still is this weird binary where it's, like, it's either straight-coded or it's queer-coded, and you're, like, picking a side of the aisle, even if the point is that you're trying not to.
Right.
Which is why I just think we should have lots of fantasy that has queer people mm-hmm. in it, and it will solve yeah. all of our problems.
I would say Ambulance is, like, a fantasy movie.
The fantasy
that's,
of...
Yeah, it's a fantasy LA.
The yeah. fantasy of them never getting stuck in traffic. Yeah.
Good movie. Some of the most insane drone work I've ever seen in my time. We need to, we'll just do an episode on Ambulance. I mean, I feel like we need to.
Fran, you've given us like four editions that we need to like really bump up on the schedule immediately.
Truly.
You guys just have such a great podcast premise that I feel like there's just so much room to talk about all sorts of shit.
Truly.
And just because things aren't overtly queer often, I mean, as you say in your sort of intro, doesn't mean they're not there.
Yeah, of mm-hmm. course. That's like, I mean, I think that like Stardust is actually a good example of it, because like from promotional materials, like in general, just kind of like, I haven't seen the trailer for this, but I wouldn't imagine.
I did watch the trailer last night.
Is
because it's like kind of, it's like they talk about this sort of in the release where the trailer is like kind of Lord of the Rings, big fantasy, not pitching it as like the more comedic undertones that this movie has,
right,
which like I think then if you go into that movie with those expectations, immediately it might kind of turn you off, because this movie is kind of knowing about some things,
right,
and like the whole Shakespeare reveal obviously I feel like would kind of be shocking if you were expecting like a very straightforward Lord of the Rings. You know,
it's a little goofy. It's like appropriately goofy, though.
Right.
But like that is sort of the whole conceit of like this podcast, is that it's like, OK, well, we do have like a very queer coded character who's played by Robert De Niro, who's one of like the most billable stars in this movie.
Yeah.
Like it's basically Claire Danes, him and Michelle Pfeiffer and Charlie Cox is not even mentioned on the poster. Like he is a hallmark of the marketing, but like what his storyline is not. So you do get basically like, haha, gotcha'd in the theater.
It's because he doesn't show up also for like 30 to 40 minutes, right?
Late.
Or if not longer.
Yeah. Oh, longer. Yeah. At least an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's just like, I mean, again, I think like some of my favorite parts are when they're on the airship, and like
it's
the
design of the ship rules. Yeah,
the lightning harvesting is very cool.
Yes,
but yeah,
sword fights are cool.
I really do think, I won't harp too much on Our Flag Means Death, but I do think like this type of thing is coming back around. The main character in Our Flag Means Death, he has like this secret closet full of clothes. He's not hiding the fact that he is like probably gay from the crew, like it's all just kind of like very accepted, but he does have this sort of like fancy lifestyle that he like indoctrinates his crew into. And I do think it's sort of like it shares a lot of the same DNA with this story, but there is more of a spin of like, there's even more of like a it's not a big deal spin, and there's also not an aspect of coming out.
Gotcha.
It's just sort of like everyone figures it out, as like the crew in Stardust does, but then it's like a non-issue. There's like never a discussion about it.
How do they have all this closet space? That's what I want to know. How can you have a second closet to hide so many other clothes?
It's an airship. You make the room, you make do. But
are there any scenes that you have, or Fran, that like moments, sequences, etc., that stand out to you from the movie, other than sort of the stuff that we've touched upon? I mean, we haven't mentioned Claire Danes literally glows like a star.
It's
which
cute.
I kind of love.
It's cute.
Very whimsical.
Yeah.
I love that it has like a big fairy tale ending, which again feels definitely not like Lord of the Rings, like straight up fantasy. Like it is very much like, and then they lived happily ever after, as narrated by Ian McKellen, and they turned into stars in the sky. Although I did get a little choked up at the stars bit. What can I say? There's not many movies.
Sap.
I am a sap.
I was just going to put it on the record that I love Sienna Miller.
Mm.
And yeah. when she shows up and does this kind of stupid shit, I just eat it up with a spoon.
Mm-hmm. She's good in this movie.
I mean, I would be as angry as she is if the guy that I rejected ended up with a star and then the guy that I settled for was about to get whisked away by a space pirate captain. Like,
yeah.
It's a zero for two situation.
It really is. Yeah. There is something also a little fruity about Charlie Cox and Henry Cavill fighting, I feel like. Like, Henry Cavill's obviously coded as a little queer,
all
but between the two of them,
we get of it. Yeah.
I do love that Michelle uses goats as like her royal steeds. There's kind of nothing cooler than like a different animal
shout
being
out
your chariot.
To Arthur Weasley. Who at this point has been in multiple Harry Potter movies, appearing in like a two scene performance as a goat,
saying nothing
turned
except,
into a man.
Right? Does he? I don't think he has a one line of dialogue. Yeah.
Because he's a goat.
Right.
He can't talk.
I love him. He's too funny.
Yeah. He's so good.
Yeah. All in all, I think it's a very nice movie.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think more movies should have sword fights, and that's one
sword
of my other
takeaways.
Sword fights
specifically set to the can-can,
add. It's so good. Nothing better than a classical drop like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's wild watching this in such close context to Moulin Rouge, too, because I, like, just was thinking about
the
can-can. And I'm like, what would Baz do? With like a space pirate type movie, he'd probably have the time of his fucking life.
He will hit a budget not known to man. They will have to reinvent an entirely new way of allocating
three Elvises.
Money to let him do the space epic that he wants to.
He'd have to do half as much cocaine as is normal.
They'd have to like sell off a portion of like the Paramount lot to. like it.
Yeah, yeah.
I would
do
like
you guys
to
think
see it,
Elvis.
Though.
Is Elvis going to be good?
I saw the trailer again last night, and because I'm so in the tank for Baz, I don't know.
I want it to be good.
Yeah.
I don't like the coloring choices that they're making, like the really brown, dirty brown of young Elvis to then like, cause it kind of I feel like the coloring looks a little muted overall. So I'm not sure.
It might be out by the time this episode drops, actually.
Well, then we'll know.
I don't know. To tune in for everyone's thoughts on Elvis.
I hope it's good. I'm like excited. I'm kind of excited for Austin Butler. I like him. It's really the Hanks of the trailer where I'm always like, what is he doing? But he's also rarely bad. I don't know. I think it could be quite good.
I agree. Because I think the thing is like you think about like Gatsby and it's all about like flash and flamboyance and it. I just hope this is like a Gatsby type movie, you know, where it's just so big and
we have discussed Elvis on so many episodes.
Because Baz, baby.
I mean, yeah, but like
one of our queerest directors.
One of our queerest straight director.
Yeah.
It looks sort of Walk Hard-ish, but
yes.
I also think like Baz Luhrmann's Walk Hard, not a terrible sort of setup.
There are worse pitches.
Yeah.
Certainly. Yeah. Tune back in to see how Elvis played the public.
Oh my God, where am I? Oh, it looks like I'm in the future. It's Jordan here, and I would just like to say that I unabashedly love Elvis. I think it is a phenomenal Baz Luhrmann film. That's probably a hot take. A lot of people aren't loving it for the reason of it being another Baz Luhrmann movie. Interesting that maximalist filmmaker Baz Luhrmann made maximalist movie about maximalist musician Elvis Presley. Odd. Anyways, I think that if you have the chance, you should go see Elvis. Fran has a phenomenal review on Letterboxd, which I would highly recommend. She gave it a solid 3.5 stars, and she also has a review on Gawker, so go read that. Oh, yeah, and Tom Hanks makes about a million choices, so there's that. But now you know how we thought Elvis was, baby. Back to the Hunka Hunka Burnin' podcast. I have to ask, do you like Australia?
I've never seen. That's his one I haven't seen.
I hadn't seen it either until this year.
Did you like it?
I kind of did, yeah.
Those near and dear to me who I trust have been like, oh, Australia's good.
It's like long, obviously, and you have to buckle in for it. But it's absolutely three movies stuffed into one movie. But I kind of just like, I fell for it.
It's,
I don't know.
Yeah. Isn't it mostly like a sweeping romantic drama?
Kinda, and then there's like a cattle herding subplot, and there's
naturally.
Also a Wizard of Oz subplot in there.
But
like the Wizard of Oz is like a Somewhere Over the Rainbow is used as like a huge emotional beat, which for me is like,
I was gonna say that's very Jordan core.
Yeah.
I mean, we get so few sweeping dramatic romances for adults that mm-hmm. like, I feel like if nothing else, you can look back on happier times and be like, yeah. wow, remember when we used to make movies where people just fell in love?
Right.
In the outback.
It's a better mm-hmm. version of the Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman sweeping epic. I think it's like Far and Away or something like that.
Mm.
But yeah. That was our
R.I.P. to Nicole Kidman having better chemistry with Hugh Jackman than Tom Cruise.
Than her husband.
Mm.
Yeah.
Gotta have a Baz Luhrmann corner, of course, on every episode,
I
naturally.
Will fucking force it.
I know you will. yeah.
There we go.
This is
Stardust.
A very sweet, very light and airy, but actually very fun movie. I highly recommend everyone watches it.
Great movie.
Big family recommend. I'm gonna be like, oh, you
it's
guys should watch this.
To
you'll
watch
love
with
it.
Your family. Yeah.
Yeah.
How much money did this make? Because I feel like it did not make much money.
Okay, so the budget was $70 million, which honestly, relatively respectful, considering
yeah.
like
mm-hmm.
no,
what's
totally. Happening here. It made $38 million domestically, but it made 137 worldwide. So it technically made back its budget, but like it opened number 4 at the box office. It opened in August of 2007 and then it was like gone by Halloween. So
yikes.
Not a great showing. But I will tell you what it opened against.
Do you think I don't know. Do you think any movies like this will ever make money again?
Well,
like, or do you think we'll get movies like this again?
We get them every now and then. I think that you can compare this to Pirates of the Caribbean if
sure.
if you want to, and
yeah.
like I still have been waiting for people to make like more like Pirates of the Caribbean adjacent things.
Yeah.
Because like those movies made an ungodly amount of money, and I think the thing is that like the varieties of them don't make very much money, so then people are scared away, but we'll get them eventually.
I think we'll get something like this. I thought like, I mean, more steampunk than fantasy, but I thought like Alita Battle Angel sort of reaches for what something
yes.
like this is going for.
Mortal
Engines and stuff like that. And I think like
City on
the
Wheels,
sort
maybe?
Of the film Twitter kind of consensus rallying behind both those movies for two very different reasons,
yes.
I think is net good for that as a genre.
Yes.
Who knows
I
if
agree.
It'll like pan out. But
the
like,
Alita army, they're there.
Yeah, they're there. Did you see that tweet that's like, if Avatar 2 does
yes.
well, maybe that means we get to have an Alita 2? It's
yes.
like, honey, I wish I had that optimism.
Have you seen the Avatar 2 trailer? Sorry.
No, not yet.
Boy, oh
I
boy.
Think I'm waiting to see it on the big screen.
Yeah.
That's where I saw it. It is truly, I cannot wait to see how it plays, because my audience was cheering for the Thor trailer before it, and the hard cut deafening silence to the Avatar 2 trailer playing like a wet sock, it was insane. Like,
that's
everyone
so
was confused. No one was excited. It's truly baffling.
But I know that there's like lots of people that are very excited for Avatar 2.
Oh,
and
for
are
sure.
Like, Avatar
yes.
2, like the return of like, you know, this,
James Cameron.
This specific
yeah.
slice of blockbuster cinema. It to me, it is a wet sock.
I will be there opening night. I cannot wait to see what the fuck that movie is.
Like, I don't like Avatar. I don't think it's well written. There's
Avatar
revisionist
hater Solomon.
Business around it. I simply do not care for Avatar. I will see Avatar 2.
You have to. You have
I
to see
will
the
do
way
my due
water.
Diligence. I don't. There's nothing about the world of Na'vi that interests me.
I need to
they
revisit
the Na'vi.
The
it's
original.
The world of Pandora.
Oh, sorry. The world of Pandora.
Did you like it when it came out?
I don't even remember. Sure. Sure, but I never think.
Sure.
I never think about yeah. it. But I'll see Avatar 2. I'm certainly not mad about it.
I just think it's like a fascinating cultural object, honestly, more than like a movie.
I think it's better that we're getting a sequel than we're not. Because like, ooh,
yeah.
non-IP, woo. We love it.
Yeah.
But I
yeah. Anyways.
I don't know. Anyway.
Should
so,
we see how the community feels about this movie?
Yeah, since the box office sort of disappointed us. I will say all of the top reviews on Letterboxd are some variation of Robert De Niro through the first brick at Stonewall, which I think
mm-hmm.
speaks well to how people have looked back favorably
yeah.
on this movie. Like, most of them are like, this is a fucking masterpiece performance. What is going on? Like, how did I not know about this? Like, it's amazing. So I think there is some
a
goodwill.
Positive vibe.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what do you think is the actual average?
I'm going to guess not a lot of people love. I'm going to say it's like more middling than like, I, you know what I mean? I think there will be like a smattering of fives from people who stan it. But I also, I think like more cultural consensus would be lower. So I'm going to guess in like the 3 range. So I'm going to go with like a 3-4.
A 3-4. Fran, would you care to put in a guess? Not required.
I'll say 3-2.
3-2. I have good news for both you guys. It's a 3-5.
Okay.
Great.
Mostly 4 stars. You were correct, Jordan. Very strong smattering of fives. I do think it's a lot of people looking back and being like, oh, this was a good movie. We right. don't get these anymore. And a lot of our friends have like rated it very high. So taste.
Yeah, there's sort of a recency bias thing of just like, you don't get this many stars just enjoying themselves anymore.
Having yeah. a good time. Yeah. Literally every review is about Robert De Niro. I cannot yeah. stress this enough.
Yeah.
Like, that's so funny.
I feel like that's maybe, that's kind of why I then put it on there, because I was just seeing list, like everyone yeah. being like, gay, gay, gay. And I was like, I guess he's gay in this movie. Gotta put it on the list.
Mm-hmm. And so. There was certainly enough meat on the bone to talk about it.
Absolutely. So. But... on the scale.
On the QQ scale.
How gay is this movie, Brooke?
Well, I'll say, you know, I love a swashbuckling adventure. I think there's some definite queer energy to them. As we all know, all pirates are a little bit queer. It's been reclaimed. The genre has been like reabsorbed back
into that.
Is it
the scurvy? Is it just because they're that way?
It's because.
You never know.
It's because the sea represents the antithesis of polite society, and that is where people could be themselves. But there's also like. Some bad shit that like historical pirates did, so it's a mixed bag. But I think pirates as like a narrative concept, gay as hell. Other than that though, this is a pretty standard fantasy adventure, so I'm gonna give it 2.5 stars.
2.5. Wow.
3 stars.
No, stick to your guns. You said 2.5.
Nah, I'll bump it to 3, but like no more than 3, because think about how much Robert De Niro is in this movie.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Not that he's like necessarily like the only metric that we need to measure off of, but that's what I feel in my heart. How about you?
Wow.
Don't let me influence you.
No, you're yeah. I was going to go 3.5 just because I feel like when he comes in, it's like such kind of a big deal, like, or because it's like played as such a, I guess not played as a plot thing, but it is like a reveal, you know? I don't know. I'll go with like a 3 as well.
I just made you question your whole life choices. You can stick with 3.5.
I'll stick with a 3.5. I'm going to stick a 3.5.
Don't
Why
question
not?
Yourself.
The wink at the end seals the deal, I think.
It is a very
it's
good
so
wink.
It's so charming. And I feel like there is a world in which this is like really, really uncomfortably homophobic and like hard to watch. And Robert De Niro threads that needle so well.
It's a very good performance.
Gives like a body performance. And I have to stand that. So I'll go 3.5.
Yeah.
Fran, where's it landed for you?
I'll say 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll say 3. I just think he's really not in the movie that much. He came in so much later than I remembered, even though it takes up such a chunk of my memory.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. He's had the lasting cultural power, but the actual
in the movie
itself,
yeah.
there's not that much of him. No.
I'll
stick.
Go down.
Sir.
No. Don't cave.
No.
Don't cave.
Fine. I'll be the outlier.
You're usually so like, no, it's this and I'm sticking to it. So,
well, because it is the thing. I watching it, I was truly shocked how like I kept waiting for him to come in and he's not coming in. Then he comes in and it's not that gay immediately. And I'm like, what's like, oh,
but
no,
it,
did I misread
is.
This?
But it
you
is.
Know, so
yes.
It takes a beat to get into it. But
I'm marking you down as a 3.5. And that's
I'm
final.
Sticking as a 3.5. I
okay,
said
great.
It. Fine.
So that's that. Great. Movie, highly recommend. It's an underseen gem. If you haven't seen it, please give it a watch. Thank you very much for bringing it to our attention and finally rescuing it from the depths of my Netflix watch list. It was so bad. I think it's like one of the first movies that I ever put on my Netflix watch
oh my
list.
God.
And it's leaving Netflix like I don't know 10 days
yeah.
after we record this episode. So
yeah,
like,
I got the little notification.
Yeah, me too.
Boy.
So I watched it just in the nick of time after the I don't know the 7-year contract yeah. or whatever finally ran out. But yes, it's so delightful. Thank you for choosing it.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me back. This is it's probably been like a decade since I've seen it, so I was really happy to revisit.
Well, thank you so much for coming back. You are the best.
Yes,
you guys are the best. I always have such a good time with you guys.
Oh, stop.
Thank you.
Stop.
Where can
You're
people find
best.
You? Obviously, I feel like people need to get in touch with Fran Mag.
They
obviously.
Do.
Yeah, Fran Magazine is sort of the big place on Substack, but you know, Twitter, Letterboxd, Fran Hoffner, all of those are fine. I'm sort of testing the waters on a private Instagram, even though I haven't kicked anyone off. But you know, if you feel brave, you can request.
that's a big thing.
I love that. I waffle back and forth between a private Instagram and a public Instagram. I just don't post that much. So I'm like, what's the point of a private? Like, that, everyone can just take a peek.
I'm too public.
But we'll see. Yeah. Oh, we know.
Wow. Rude.
I say lovingly. Well, Fran Magazine is the
best. A must read.
The best subscription decision I have ever made.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
It's so great. I feel like I learn about so much stuff that I, like, wouldn't have, like, learned about otherwise. Your classical music recent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Was excellent. It's so good. Anyway, so everyone should.
We're fans.
Subscribe. We are not as exciting, but we are also on social media, mostly on Twitter. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant, and we're also on Letterboxd at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And the podcast is on Spotify and on Apple. Harvesting lightning, shooting stars in craters, wherever you care to get your podcast. Drop us a rate. 5 stars only.
Very nice.
We didn't actually talk about the stardust aspect of this movie very much, but there is stardust.
There is. Claire Danes is like a star. They say measly handful of stardust, and I screamed, you know, pointed at the screen.
Leo pointing meme. Yes. But yeah, give us 5-star reviews if you're so inclined. You drop us a follow. You can tweet at us, tell us what you think about Captain Shakespeare, add to like the letterbox love if you would like to. And let us know what you want to see us cover in the future.
And Brooke, what are we covering in the future?
Well, since this is the summer, it is another entry into Q Fast, Q Furious, woo! Our summer series on the Fast and Furious franchise. Next week is Furious 7.
Oh, baby.
Get ready to cry, everybody.
Daddy's got to go to work.
Daddy will have to go to work. Already in the can. It's a good episode. So, yes, we will see you next week for that.
And Brooke, do you have anything you would like to leave our listeners with?
Captain Shakespeare, I would lay down my life for you, problematic or not. I just am that committed to gay pirates.